Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. A few minutes past 4 p.m. Every Tuesday, we do the think tank. Today, we have Judge Tom Frawley and Braxton Payne. Let me ask you guys, let's go 30,000-foot view. So I know you don't know actual answers to this, but you're both smart guys. I'm interested in your prognostication. We know where we've been. We know where we were with Trump 1.0. We know Biden. We know how the election went. I don't personally have a very good feel for where the hell we're going. Like, I have a hard time picturing the next administration. I thought I knew Trump, and then he keeps changing on me and comes back more popular than ever, and I'm in the vast minority. Brax, how do you start? Where what vibe do you feel for the upcoming, let's just say, year or two?
Yeah, so a couple things. I mean, Trump has... I don't want to use the word reinvented himself. He's been a candidate in politics out of convenience, and he's been a quote-unquote businessman out of convenience. It's always what is next. He's a better grifter than I think people give him credit for. So those are the certain things that I think about, and it's always comes down to is he's one of those people that, and you know, his past people that have worked for him have said this, it's the last person in the room that gets the last word that formulates his final opinion. So who is going to be that last person in the room in this new administration? And to me, it looks like a lot of the people he's surrounding themselves are, I don't think anyone's really a Trump loyalist. I think they're Trump loyalists because they think they can get jobs or they think they can move up in the ladder. I don't think anyone particularly like loves the man like a lot of his followers do. So he's going to surround himself with a lot of yes men and women.
Yeah.
And therefore, that gives me pause to think of, okay, so what are their agendas? Mm-hmm. And that is what will drive Trump's agenda. Since Election Day, I'll be honest, I haven't watched a lot of news. I've picked it up here and there. And I think most people before the election, I mean, you looked in the voting numbers, less people voted in 2024 than they did in 2020. And like here in the city of St. Louis, it was down 10% turnout from 2016. People have tuned it out because they don't like it anymore.
Yeah.
And as somebody that works in it that wants to tune it out, obviously I can't because it's my job, but I want to. I think a lot of people are doing that, and I think he might be banking on that. I think he may be thinking, okay, you know, not as many people are going to be paying attention. I'll do something that's popular. Holly came out, you know, let's do the child tax credit higher. Let's do things that, you know, maybe we'll get headlines and be popular, and then I can do all the other stuff that I really want to do under the radar.
So as you know, as everyone knows who listens to the show, I don't like Trump. I don't think he's a good person, but he's impressive. He's done things that no one else has ever done. Do you think it's possible for him to grift the world? Can he pull this off?
Yeah. I mean, look what he's already done. I mean, he visited France and President Macron. I mean, they looked like when they shook hands, looked like lifelong buddies. I know he doesn't like them. But the United States is powerful. So therefore, he's going to, I mean, they have to listen. I mean, you saw, and as soon as he announced the tariffs on Canada, the parliamentarians, even the Conservative Party, which traditionally would match along the Republican Party views, came out and pretty much said, you know, like, if this happens, our economy is screwed, and therefore we need to figure out a ways to get along with them. And they're going to do that. They're going to appease them. And it's not, I still to this day do not think he understands how tariffs work. I really, truly believe that. I think he was sold a bag of goods from people and this is how it's going to work. I really don't think he understands how it works. And then, you know, he backtracks on everything. He's backtracked in the 4 years he was in office. He backtracked as a candidate. He just backtracked last week when he said it's really hard to lower grocery prices. Well, duh. I mean, everyone knows that. And once things go up, it's hard to bring them back down. It's simple economics, but also economics is not simple. So when I say the word simple economics, that's not simple. So most Americans don't understand it. They understand they have less money in their pocket than they did 4 years ago because of inflation. Therefore, okay, I'll go with something that's new and different. And you know what? Trump's always said he would be on my side. I don't believe, and the Democrats have a messaging problem. We've talked about that before. And you know what? Okay, we'll give them a shot.
Judge?
I'm very concerned, partly because he's got a Supreme Court that would appear to do not everything, but much of what he his agenda is. I'm very concerned about the people he wants to put in control of some of the most important agencies we have. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in charge of health, when he his whole agenda is anti-vaccine. I don't know whether that means he's going to prohibit the preparation or the further, I guess, evolution of vaccines. Now we're talking about punishing the people that were part of the January 6th committee. And what I read today is Liz Cheney is number one target, along with Nancy Pelosi. I was hoping that Trump would recognize that he won, which is what he did, and that there would be some graciousness on his part. And sadly, it's not only is there no graciousness, it's even worse. Elon Musk, in charge of anything, after he's basically attempted to, and maybe to some extent did, buy the election with this $1 million, if you vote, i.e. vote the way I want you to vote, I'm very concerned where we're going to go. I like the fact that Biden and his folks seem to be focused on getting judges in and not allowing the creation of even more openings and thereby having more people who are just way, way, way out there. But I'm very concerned that the Supreme Court is not focused on what America and what the Constitution is about. They sort of read it in their own way, and it's not what I was taught, and I suspect not what you were taught in law school.
Is your gut, Judge, that Trump just did a hell of a good job of picking like-minded justices, or do you think that when they sit down for a case, they contemplate what the president might want?
I think it's a mix. I think I'm becoming more impressed with Amy Barrett. She seems to be more of that second group of actually thinking through what's the law, what should it be, how should it be evolved. Whereas Judge Cannon in Florida, I don't think she thought about anything other than, well, what does the president want me to do? And so then she wrote, a 30 or 40 page opinion that was basically just my words sucking up to the president. So I'm very disappointed in Clarence Thomas, who seems to be very unwilling to recognize that there's a problem when your wife is working for the president, that there might be this appearance, which I think is greater than that, appearance of impropriety with you sitting on and ruling on cases. I mean, I believe if I were in that situation and as a state judge and I was doing that, I would be called in front of the discipline committee and say, what are you thinking? What is going on in your head?
It sends a chill up my spine. I graduated from law school in 90, and it was serious as a heart attack. The appearance, the very appearance, mm-hmm. I remember that, the very appearance. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you're doing anything wrong. The very appearance of impropriety right. scared the hell out of us.
Right.
And
right.
today it's like, eh.
I know, and he doesn't seem to have any, he provides no justification to me that I've seen as to why it's okay. And I have no, of course, maybe I'm not very objective about it. I don't know what he could say that would convince me it's okay. All right? And then the other one, Eliotto. Let's see. When in doubt, blame your wife. Okay? I didn't hang the flag. She hanged the wife. Throw my wife under
it's
the
weird,
bus.
Isn't it? It
yeah,
is weird.
It's beyond weird. It's disappointing.
We're not supposed
it's
to know scary. These things about these
it's
guys.
It's really, really, I mean, they're the law of the land. I would they undo all of these criminal protections, if you will? The right to counsel, search and seizure. I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, and that's why the Supreme Court's favorability rating has shrunk since the 80s when it was high around 80%. And mm-hmm. it's gone down. I've seen polling anywhere below 50, just below 50 to, high 50s. I mean, that's significant, even though that seems that's 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. But it's stayed at that 80% number for decades.
Mm-hmm.
I want to touch on one thing that he said about RFK Jr. And I find him fascinating and I find his evolution fascinating. First off, he's a rich kid that has had everything handed to him, which for some reason the Trump followers you know, Trump was kind of the same way, and they seem to cling on to these type of people because they seem successful when they've had a leg up their entire life. So I find that whole fascination, and I you know, I'm under the age of 35, so a lot of my friends, RFK was, you know, this fascinating candidate going in. They saw him, you know, it's like, okay, they're talking about, you know, a lot of them are obsessed with like Bitcoin and also health and fitness. And one of the things that, you know, I see a lot of my friends on social media, it's like, oh, RFK is okay. You know, he's never going to take away the vaccines because everyone's become so used to them and everything like that. But it's the stripping of all the toxins, quote unquote, toxins in our food. And that is bipartisan. I'm seeing from friends on social media that they're so hyper focused on that. A lot of them, because they are my age, have young kids and they don't want the preservatives in their foods and everything like that. And I'm seeing, like, you know, is Trump going to actually take on the food industry with RFK Jr.? Like, I'm so fascinated by him and his evolution and the almost, I mean, I've always said that Trump's loyal followers are a cult. RFK has a similar faction, but like politically, they don't seem to align on anything else besides maybe populism. So I'm fascinated by him and the whole Elon and Vivek fascination. Maybe it's their personalities and, you know, they talk, you know, and I think a lot of it has to do too with, I see these, I don't understand crypto. I understand that a lot of people invested at my age, they think it's going to make them rich one day. And I, you know, who am I to say? I think a lot of times they're sold a bag of goods, that it's not going to come to fruition, but you know, it keeps rising. So who am I to say anything? But I'm fascinated with the people he's choosing that are non-traditional, even for Republicans. And I know that like people like Senator John Thune, you know, will take over for Mitch McConnell. I don't see him just like embracing an Elon Musk or a Vivek or RFK Jr. You know, I don't see that. And even frankly, even his pick for the Department of Labor. I mean, she is a pro-labor union Republican. Who would have thought you'd see the day that a Republican would pick somebody that's pro-union? I'm fascinated by the cultishness of who he picks and who he follows and also his followers and who they trust.
Yeah. I saw that Kamala Harris made her first statement since losing, and she said, this will never break our spirit. And it pissed me off so bad because I think one of the reasons the Democrats lost, and I wasn't smart enough or engaged enough to call this as it was happening, but in hindsight, there were so many platitudes. The campaign, the Democratic campaign, looked like a campaign like just add water. We're the party of joy. Look at how happy we all are. We're not dark like these other guys. Platitude. When we fight, we win. And the whole time, unbeknownst to me at least, it was falling on deaf ears.
I suspect that they mean the Democratic Party with a African-American candidate, figured that they would garner most of the African-American vote, with a female, that they would garner most of the female vote. And then you add Trump's position, was largely as a racist and largely a homophobe, that we had those two together, they figured that that would just happen, is my view. And it didn't just happen. I'm still absolutely would love to have somebody explain to me, if you're African-American or female, how you could vote for him in this context, knowing what he has said, what he has done to women in terms of the physical treatment. I don't get it. I just don't. But I think you're right. They just figured, we got the working class, we're the blue-collar guys, everybody's going to stay Michigan and Ohio. We got that rocked.
Yeah.
And they didn't add the fact that they didn't.
To his point, I do get it. I do get why people of color, even young voters. I mean, we were hemorrhaging young voters under Biden, mainly because of Palestine. And we were hemorrhaging, you know, black voters. We were hemorrhaging female voters. We were hemorrhaging until Joe Biden stepped out. And we were able to gain a lot of those numbers back to anywhere from 10 to 20% back. I mean, frankly, the numbers were showing, and they went, you know, his campaign managers went on a podcast and said, you know, which is absolutely insane to me that they tried to keep him in as long as they did, that we were going to lose with 400 plus electoral votes. We were hemorrhaging. So we understood that. But I understand why sometimes voters of color and women voted for Trump. And I think a lot of it has to come down to is their pocketbook was more important than any social identity or any other issue. They 8% inflation is so high and so hard to overcome. It was going down, still going down. Unemployment rate is still low at 4.2%. You know, I get it. We can say all those numbers all the darn time. And if we can keep saying them, okay, great. But they don't care if they don't feel it. So that's number one. Number two is a lot of, especially voters of color, hate institutions because they have been screwed by institutions their entire life. Structural racism in every institution, from the court system to our Treasury Department to housing, you name it, they've been screwed by it their whole lives. So Donald Trump comes along and says, I'm going to screw every institution and it's all going away. Well, good, because you know what? I've never had trust in those institutions anyway. Might as well give this guy a shot. Maybe the institution will be better. And I think a lot of, I mean, yeah, right? Still 85%+ of voters of color, black voters of color, voted for Kamala Harris. But we hemorrhage Latinos. Also, Latinos, a lot of times they're born here. They're not naturalized citizens. They have assimilated to this country, and they're also super religious. And so that's one of the things that I think we need to talk
about.
Take
a quick break from the think tank. Right back, DGS and KMOX. Welcome back, guys. DGS 427. We have a couple minutes left here with the think tank. Way too big of a topic for 2 minutes, but it's timely, and we talked about it earlier today. Another school shooting. I have no answers. I don't see anyone who does have answers. I have answers. I just don't think anyone's going to do it. It really feels like during my natural lifetime, I will be shocked if we do anything. Mm-hmm. Thoughts?
Yeah, well, I agree with you. You know, David Hogg, he suffered from a school shooting. Now he's been an activist for many years now. He's an adult. He's actually running now to be the vice chair of the DNC. He announced that a couple days ago. And his whole thing is, you know, we need to make incremental change. And that is something rare that you hear in somebody that his whole life focus has been on gun mm-hmm. control, is that, hey, we'll take anything that we can get, whether it's at a local level, whether it's a town of 200, whether it's a town of 1,000. It's just frustrating. And the Madison County Madison mayors came out and said, you don't need to know the names of these people unless you need to just respect their privacy. And I think that was a big, bold move. I know that's not about gun control, but I think that's respectful because we need to be focusing on, obviously, the victims. But, you know, let people have some privacy to grief.
The case in Illinois, I think, is a good one to watch, which has to do with, the guns that you can make at home, and that the judge that has it on appeal now has just kept the injunction in place so that the law is still in effect, although the trial judge has basically said it's unconstitutional. But I don't see anything happening because people say, well, we have the Second Amendment. We have a right to bear arms, not necessarily the right to carry arms, in my opinion. And there needs to be some recognition of what arms were and what bear meant when that whole amendment was passed, yeah. The Second Amendment. And nobody wants to look at it.
Thank you, guys.
Now you can support making a gun that
right.
is unregistered
right.
and unseeable.
Yeah. Farthest thing away from the Second Amendment.
To me it is. Yeah. It's like night and day.
Thank you, fellas.